Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew. So I guess we'd better be good. Today we have Matt Neely, head gnome John Arcadian, and myself, Ange. On this episode, we're going to riff off an article I wrote on August 11th about games that change the way we play. Sometimes it's a system, sometimes it's just the game itself. Either way, everything changes after that point. Before we dive into the main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. Since we're going to be spending time talking about games that profoundly changed our approach to RPGs, I thought we'd open with a question about bad games. John, Matt, tell us about a miserable experience you had with a game. No need to name names, just give us the general gist of your horror story.
I'll do the one that I told you about at this Gen Con. So I signed up, and I will leave out all identifying details, but I signed up for a game. I'm like, oh man, I'm actually going to play a game this Gen Con. I'm going to make sure to schedule some time to play a game. So, of course, I did that last minute because I cannot do those things beforehand and, you know, get my first pick of what I want. And so I'm looking for a game, and I see one that looks interesting. I say, oh, this could be very cool. And I go, I find the group, and I'd actually heard you say really good things about the person running the game and the game beforehand. And I get to the game, and we start playing the game, and it's a modern-day investigative horror sort of thing. And everything's going, you know, okay, and the players are kind of riffing on each other a little bit. But the GM was not feeling it at that point in time, and they just didn't have any energy. So everything the players were kind of like throwing up to, like, you know, have the GM grab hold of and move along and kind of, you know, validate, like, yes, okay, that thing you're trying to do, this character action you're playing out, it went well between player to player, but then it never went anywhere because the GM never used those to move the plot along or incorporated, you know, those ideas in. It was like a very half fun game. And then we'd like, okay, so cool. What does this awesome thing we just put a lot of effort into doing and interacting and playing out the love scenario between these two people? Where does that go? Pretty much nowhere. Okay. And so it kind of limped along. So it was just a mediocre game. And it was sad because I had super high hopes for that because I remember hearing, you know, people talk about that game and that game master. So it was probably just an off night for them.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about this and I have a feeling that when I played it before, the GM may have had a little bit more energy and I may have had a stronger group of players because I just remember it being a ton of fun. But looking back on it, I can see some of what you're saying as well.
And there were a couple of players, like there was a sort of like disassociation between, like, there were like two groups of players, the adult group and the kids group, you know, because we were playing mm-hmm. kids and then there were adults, and it took a long time to even get those two groups together. So nobody was interacting with each other and everybody was almost like running two different plot lines. So that could have, you know, caused some issues in the GM being able to pick up and run with it.
Yeah. How about you, Matt?
Well, I'm actually going to deviate from what I was going to say after listening to John's story, because the only time I've gone to Gen Con, I ended up rooming with one of the other gnome's friends. I don't remember whose friend it was. Really nice guy. It might have been yours, John.
I don't remember.
Really nice guy. Had a great weekend with him. We ate a couple meals together. But he said, hey, I have an open slot in my Call of Cthulhu game. And I'm there like, yes. And I show up, and it was a really good game. And, you know, I had a lot of fun, but somewhere in the middle of it, there's this like ghost or spirit that shows up of this ancient Mayan king. And this one player who happened to be female discovers it. And he goes into great detail about how he's standing there naked and all of his man bits and all of the piercings in his man bits. And, you know, the whole like piercings that slowly get bigger over time. So you got like big hanging floppy things. You know, he's just great detail. And then later he and I are talking and he's there like, well, you know, it just gets my goat. Every time I run a scenario like this, it's always the female player that I have to describe all this to. And I said, well, have you ever considered not putting an NPC with giant floppy genitalia and piercings and blah, blah, blah. And he's there like, but it's historically accurate.
Oh.
Yes, but does it have to be in there?
Oh.
That's the perfect reason for the X card, because I would probably have X carded that. Be like, you know what? Cool. We get it. It's historical. It's weird. We don't need to know that level of detail. Like, keep the game PG. It's not necessarily sexual, but, you know, I don't necessarily want to, like, yeah, cool. Here, we're gonna put the veil over it because.
And yeah. You could tell he was awkward with it and she was awkward with it and everybody else had the 1,000-yard stare. And otherwise, great game, great guy, just weird.
I can guarantee you that is one of that female player's horror stories.
So let me tell you about the historical penis.
Have you ever watched Z. Frank?
Nope.
He's got this fact, this web series called True Facts About the, and then it's a type of animal. And in his marsupials one, he starts talking about the wombat and then the wombat's penis. And then he says to somebody off screen, you know, why do we always do this? We're talking about the beauty and majesty of nature, and then we always talk about their penis. It'd be like talking about Wagner and then talking about Wagner's penis. No, Jerry, I don't want you to Google that. Oh, it's hilarious.
So, Angela, can you top that?
I don't know that I can top that. I did also have a game go belly up at Gen Con this year. I got a chance to try Blades in the Dark, which I was really interested in because I've heard good things about it, and showed up to the table, and right off the bat, the GM was really low energy, didn't really seem to have a lot of enthusiasm, didn't really do any explaining about what the world is like to us. You know, his only question was like, are you guys familiar with this? And, you know, a couple of players were like, no, I'm not. But he didn't really do more than say it's just, yeah, it's urban fantasy, you know, like fantasy, but in a city. And then, you know, just as things kept going, you know, nothing was really making sense. He didn't do any of the world building to set up our characters together or explain why we were working together. We had a situation where we all ended up splitting up for good reason. And he basically goes, right after we did this, he's like, so when you guys get back together, and I'm like, wait a second, we have no way of getting in touch with each other. You just said our last safe house got burned. How are we supposed to hook back up? And he just got all flustered. And, you know, we tried to limp along a little further, but about an hour into the game, he basically canceled it. He announced that he wasn't feeling well, that he was really sorry. He gave us generics if we wanted them and canceled our 4-hour game 1 hour into it. Which, as my friend that I was there with said, she's like, well, I would rather he did that than try and suffer through another 3 hours of it. Because yeah. It was bad. And while I am perfectly willing to give Blades in the Dark another chance, she's like, nope. She's like, I don't ever want to see that game again.
And that's a pity that, you know, a bad experience, which, you know, if the GM wasn't feeling great, it's understandable. You know, you try to suffer through it, but then you're like, wait, I'm down with Concrete already. I need to just head out of here.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a pity because that sounds like a phenomenal game. I've heard Phil and Chris talk about it, and I'm like, oh, I want to play that with somebody who knows how to run it.
Yeah, I think it was a combo of he probably wasn't feeling well because he'd been abusing himself for the con up to that point, and then just didn't really understand or know the essence of the game. So once he got into it and realized he was in way over his head, he just bailed.
Mm.
So c'est la vie.
So Ange, I your story actually reminds me of another story. My group made a GM cry once.
Oh, no.
It was her first time GMing, and she was a little, you know, wet behind the ears, and she had set up this plot where all of our characters who were in America needed to go to Japan to further the next step of the plot or whatever, So she has, you know, mysterious cloaked NPC or whatever tell us, you got to go to Japan. And we start asking for more details, like, where in Japan? It's kind of a big place. And, you know, who are we supposed to meet there? And she had none of that prepared. I guess when we got there, she was going to have, like, ninjas jump us on the plane or something. But eventually, she, like, burst into tears and ran out of the room. And that was the end of that game.
Hopefully, she recovered from that and tried again some later date, maybe?
I can't say for certain. Not in all the time I knew her for the next couple years, but then we lost contact. We had a nasty falling out when we stopped dating.
Oh, ah.
Making her cry at the game wasn't when you stopped dating.
No. But not long after that. It didn't help.
Okay, let's move on to our topic of discussion. My article was inspired by the hashtag RPG a day thing that's been happening this August. One of the days asked about the most impactful game ever played, and most of my friends interpreted it as emotional role-playing, you know, the game where you really got deep into the story. But a couple of others talked about games that changed how they approach RPGs in general. And this got me thinking about it and examining my own history with games, which games truly changed the way I approach things. I can think of three in my life, but I also figured it would be a cool topic to bring in some other gnomes and hear their stories. So, John, Matt, tell us about games that change the way you play.
You know, it was one that I was going to use for one of the worst games I ever played, but it really changed the way I played because it moved me from being a player to being a GM. Because I said, I can do better than that. I want to do better than that. I want there to be a better game amongst my friends. So, you know, I was in college. It was actually the first time I'd actually gotten to play games like that, you know, hardcore with other people. And we were playing a D&D second edition game. And the GM was not having a great time, a great life, and had started taking it out on the players. Like, there were things that were just like, no, that doesn't happen. Yeah, it happens. Like, my warrior was a big, dumb warrior and, like, was propositioned by another warrior, and he was too dumb to figure it out. And I'm sitting there going, no, this is not something I want to happen to my character. Like, well, roll an intelligence roll. How about we just not, you know? And, you know, we kind of played through it, and it was like, this is not cool. And I eventually abandoned that character. But, like, another character of mine, we killed an alligator and I wanted to tan its leather, and I looked up how to tan leather, and I said, okay, here, I know exactly how I would do this in the wild. And I did all this research and all this passion as, like, you know, a 19-year-old kid. And I bring that, and so we tan them in this lake nearby, and we go into the dungeon, and we come out, it should be good. Monsters have gone off with the alligator skins. Oh. Like, maybe if we were playing an old school game where everybody, you know, where every single time, you know, where all we're doing is killing, moving on, killing, moving on, killing, moving on. But that wasn't the tone of the game up till then. And it was really just one of those, like, I didn't plan for it and I don't want you to have any fun. Another player in that game was, like, starting to do things just to piss the GM off because he was tired of it. You know, just, you know, he was already a chaotic player, but he was like, nah, screw it. I'm just going to do this thing. I don't care. I'm going to use the spell, deal with it, and was rules lawyering him. So after that game, I said, I can do better than this. We had a long break in that game, and we never got back to it. I think none of the players really wanted it. But over the summer, I started GMing little one-shots for people, and, you know, GM'd one for this person then, and their new character, and one for this person, their new character. And I took the, yeah, of course that can happen. Sure, of course that can happen. Yeah, oh, you want that? Yeah, all right, I'll find a way to make that happen. I can still find a way to make you regret it or have fun with it. You know, like, I want a magic axe. Cool, you go up a wizard's tower, you meet the wizard. The wizard's like, oh, yeah, I guess I did put this challenge out like 100 years ago. I forgot about that. Oh, so what do you want, a magic weapon? You know what, there's this annoying spear. Boom, I put it in your axe. Now you have a magic axe. Enjoy. And, you know, so now he has this magic axe with a talking halfling in it that talks to him all the time. But that became his character crutch. And, you know, I said, yeah, you can get rid of that and the magic's just there if you want it. He's like, no, that's fun. That's great. You know, so I very much, that was, I think, what set me on a very player-focused, player-first, of course we can make that happen. Sure, you can have an extra free level. hey, you're fighting a dragon now. You're sixth level. Come on. You wanted that free level. Now you're fighting a dragon. So, you know, it got me on that focus. And so in that way, it was really good.
How about you, Matt?
Well, I just want to say, John, in regards to that first story with your warrior and the other warrior, somewhere in the, I'll wait till you're finished drinking, somewhere in the Gnome Stew articles, there is a post that Martin wrote called All Holes Filled with Harn. Yes, you knew exactly what I was saying. Yes, which is his same experience, only his was at a con. Seems like all of our worst games are like, oh, this was at a con. Probably because if we had to sit through it game after game after game, we'd quit.
Well, actually, to interrupt you, Matt, because I was going to have you talk next, but you kind of lead into my story where I had finally gotten back into gaming after about a 10-year drought. I mean, I'd done a little bit online, you know, and like a one-shot here or there, but it was a very long time with no regular tabletop game. So I decided I needed to find some people to play with, and I found a group. And I did the vetting that you should. You know, the GM seemed weird, but okay, whatever. The first game I showed up for, it was obvious he had proclaimed how good a GM he was. Yet every single NPC in his town was named Joe, Bob, or Joe Bob, or some variation thereof. The physics, I mean, yes, it's fantasy, so I try and have an open mind, but the physics in his world made no sense. He tried to have, like, he had some villain setting up a Disneyland-esque carnival, you know, miles away from any civilization, and it's like, peasants and people of these villages are not going to travel to come to this thing. You know, that doesn't make any sense, but whatever, it was a game and the other players were decent. So it's like, we put up with it. And part of this goes back to what John was saying. One of the guys in the group was specifically playing a character to basically mess with the GM. You know, he had designed the character to basically do all the things that the GM didn't want him to do, just kind of circumvent anything that the GM threw in front of him in kind of the most obnoxious way possible. But that was how he had fun with the game. And I was putting up with it because it was a game. The players were good. The GM turned out to be really, really creepy. So I you know, would get rides to the game with other people. And then I found out there was a little con in town happening. And I'm like, you know what? I've got free time this weekend. I'm going to go to this con. And the very first game I played at this con, it was a Teenage Superheroes in the 1960s game. And that game was player focused. What we did mattered. The world made sense. The GM was great at integrating what we wanted to do into all of this stuff. And I was suddenly like, I can't go back to that game ever again. I'm just like, I'm done. It doesn't matter if I don't have a regular group. I have to have standards about what I play because my time matters. Luckily, the other guys, the other players in that group also soon defected after I stopped playing. And after the first of the year, we started gaming together, and that was 14 years ago, and we still game together today.
Nice. I'm jealous of that streak.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work to keep it going, but it's a good group.
I wonder if every gaming group has that guy, you know, the one that nobody really wants to game with, and so you form groups until he finds out there's a group and invites himself, and then you all abandon that group and form a new group. I have several of those. Well, I had several of those in my group of gamers, and then I moved to New York to get away from them.
When I was contacted about starting the new group, my first question is, he's not going to be there, is he? There are other aspects to that story that I'll leave out, but let's just say I was pretty desperate to game to actually go back a second time.
Oh.
Yeah, he was really, really creepy.
Was it you that wrote that article, The Worst Dungeon Master Ever?
I don't think so.
Yeah. No. You're referring to that forum post, I think, that was out there a long time ago bouncing around about somebody who went to like a college and found like the worst dungeon master ever. And he's like, I've only got these tables to roll your genitalia size because people ask for them, you know? Yeah. Yeah. With your story, Matt, was it you who wrote that article?
No, because the GM in my story was otherwise an excellent GM. He just tried to be historically accurate.
So what was the most impactful game for you, Matt? The one that changed the way you played or changed your playing style?
I think for me, it has been more of a slow change over time. Because when I started playing, by God, if Gary Gygax hadn't said it on page 34, it wasn't happening. You know? And so, you know, everybody calculated encumbrance and we tracked rations and we tracked, you know, where, you know, you were keeping your sword because it totally made a difference. And I would belittle other GM's games that players told me about. They'd be there like, oh, you know, my GM had these raiders attack us and the one was holding the mage's head underwater and holding his face. And so the mage, like, stuck his hand in the raider's face and cast magic missile. And I'm there like, no, he didn't, because magic missile has verbal and somatic components that he couldn't possibly have done in that situation. And, you know, and I'm there like, I guess if you don't mind not following the rules, that's okay. You know, that was me in a nutshell, early GMing. Somehow I still managed to get groups together, but I've gotten the stick out of my butt over the years, as I've gotten sick and tired of that stuff, and I've seen other people's games that don't fall apart because of that stuff. I don't know if I could put my finger on a single game, though. So I'm sorry. I guess I'm not really answering the question.
I mean, that answers it, because like I remember when I was writing Silvervine and was researching other games. I got to a point where I developed enough of the system. I said, I want to go research other games more hardcore to influence this. But now I'm not stealing from it hardcore. You know, I got over the idea that like, oh, I have to do it all. It has to come like strict tabula rasa from my head without any other inspiration. I got over that, you know. And then I started looking at other stuff and I went, why didn't I just use GURPS? Oh, many reasons, but why didn't I just use Savage Worlds? Why didn't I just use Fate? You know, and that those sorts of things, reading those were like, there are these open structures. Because before that, the only things that I'd had more than a passing, like, deep connection to were Shadowrun, World of Darkness, Dungeons and Dragons, you know, through second ed and third ed. And it's like, yeah, they're all crunchy systems in their own ways. You know, World of Darkness is crunchy, you know, in other ways, but it's still super crunchy. You know, I can't wait till I get Dominate level 3 and can do this, you know? So it's just, it was figuring out those games and seeing them that made that slow progression and made me feel more free in my, sure, I'm going to let it happen. Like, yeah, we don't need to follow the rules. There are games that work without being super structured.
Yeah.
Now when I go to meetups, I run a lot of games at meetups just to encounter new people and be like, hey, I like that person from that one shot. Why don't you come join the super group that I'm forming, you know, for long term now that I'm fairly settled, you know, in life for at least a few years. But it's amazing when I see people come to it and are like, oh, but I need to do this. I'm like, meh. Does it work that way? I'm saying it works that way. And then like a couple of games later down, like the four session campaign arc I'm running, they're like, oh, I've forgotten all the cool stuff you've given us. I forgot I could do that with my prestidigitation. I'm like, yeah, use it this way again. That's fine.
I'm definitely far more into the cool factor now. Is it cool? Does it fit the genre? Does it fit the theme of the game? Does it fit what we've done so far? Sure, we can totally do that. Another instance that changed the way I play was actually the first time I GM'd. I had never GM'd before. I had always gamed with guys, you know, and there was the occasional girl, but let's just be honest, it was mostly guys. And I had gamed with guys who were very into the crunch. I played champions in college, you know, and there was a joy to mathematically creating the character that you wanted to play. And there was no way I could ever run that because I didn't know the rules well enough. Because I watched the guys play, and, you know, if you didn't know the rules, you couldn't run the game or play the game to the highest level. And so I was like, no, I couldn't possibly be a GM. And then in the 2000s, when I got the new group, one of the guys was like, so when are you going to run a game? And I'm like, oh, I don't GM. That's bullshit. When are you going to run a game?
Hell yes.
And, you know, TJ is fantastic in that he cultivates gamers around him to make sure that he always has gaming.
Mm-hmm.
So he pushed me into running that first game. And that was the moment I realized, hey, I actually can do this. You know, and that was 12 years ago. So it's been an interesting ride since then, but it did totally change the way I approach things.
It is very interesting how GMing completely changes your idea and your take on it. My wife, Paula, got pushed into GMing at a convention because somebody didn't show up for their game. And she goes, well, I could run Fiasco. I've played in a lot of Fiasco. We just need a Fiasco book and the playsets to be able to do it, you know? And so she goes to Phil and sees what he has. He's like, hey, you should run this. It's only 2 pages. She's like, I remember playing Lasers and Feelings. Let's play Rocker Boys and Vending Machines, you know? So she goes over and from scratch with no prep runs Rocker Boys and Vending Machines, you know, which it is made to do that, you know? So it's a good game to do that with, but she picks it up and does it and is like, oh, yeah, I can do this. I see where you're not that impressive in running these games. You just bullshit things. I'm like, yes, that's my philosophy in life. I bullshit till it works. But it completely changed her idea. And it's like, yes, bring more gamers in. Like, you know, and I like the fact that the winds are shifting that way to make games more accessible like that. Mm-hmm. And emphasize the, sure, figure it out. Tell a good story. You know, have a good time. It doesn't need to be mechanically sound. It has to be crazy and fun.
There is a certain degree of, and I understand the people who love the crunch. There is a certain level of joy, of satisfaction in getting the mechanics of your character or your game set up just the way you wanted it to have everything fall out the way, you know, you envision it. It's just, that's not all that's there about games. You know, that's not all that's in role-playing games. So I like that more and more of these games are doing the, you know, just what works, you know, roll with it and see what works.
You can always do that in a crunchy game, but it's harder to take a crunchy game, you know, and move to the more open space. You can always bring more openness to the crunch.
Right.
I kind of have, you know, love-hate relationship right now with crunch. I am totally a crunch guy. You've read my articles about, you know, what are the probabilities of doing this with these dice and blah, blah, blah.
The 7.5 hit point orc?
Your articles of math.
Yes. And my original thought for, like, what's the worst game you've ever played, I was going to tell you about a couple games I've played where people had their homebrew systems that did not freaking work. You know, and for example, one game, the guys there are like, well, if you have one die in this, you're kind of like a normal guy, and two is kind of heroic, and three is awesome. And so I'm there like, okay, I build my character, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm there like, okay, how do I attack this guy? I have one die and stabby, stabby, so I should be okay, right? So they're like, well, two dice or two successes or more on your roll succeeds. And they're like, two successes or more. On my one die, yes. And how do I get two successes with one die? You can't. I see. You know, so there's always that end of the pool, and there's always the end of the pool with the narrative games where it's like, this isn't a game. This is just, let's sit around and tell a collaborative story, you know, mm-hmm. and that doesn't always sit real well with me. But on the other hand, I'm going to get us hate mail, John. On the other hand, I've been playing Pathfinder recently, and I'm not a big fan. I mean, it's not a bad system insofar as 3.5 was not a bad system, and Pathfinder is a few minor tweaks to 3.5, so it's not a bad system. The part that's driving me crazy is that in order to keep selling books, they keep putting out books on, here's another book full of one-legged cheetah men that you can play.
Hey, I love my one-legged cheetah man. Gimpy runs super fast.
And then, you know, you get to a certain point and it's like, how many distinct races do I need before you just say F it and give me a purchase point system? You know, why do I need 57 different races, each of which are not quite what I want to play, when you could just give me a purchase point system at this point and I could play exactly what I wanted to play? And it's driving me nuts. That said, I'm enjoying the game. I'm just ignoring all that.
What I love about Pathfinder is that it takes the splat book creep of D&D 3.5 and just runs with it and loves it and takes it everywhere it needs to go. And it's just like, yeah, sweet. That's awesome. Cool. Like, this is phenomenal and cheesy and weird and stupid, but it's awesome to sit there and read through every single book and just like sit there with the books and be like, oh yeah, I could make this, you know, and then find the ridiculous, here's how I become a god by, you know, seventh level with this array of spells.
You know, maybe I just need to embrace the wahoo. You know, I'm still looking at it like I'm playing D&D and I'm there like, you know, Dragonborn and Drow are actually kind of too wahoo for me. And here I'm in a party with like a half vampire and a tiny gnome warrior and a something else crazy. And I'm there like, this is too much.
Your grog nerd is showing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
What happened? Did a wide mouth goblin punch you in the tape mat?
Okay, when we get to Goblin Punch, I think it's time to move to our outro. Special thanks to our Patreon backers, awesome gnome supporters like Rob Abruzzato, Jeremy French, and The Mensch. Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link to the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by Game Changing Hair Growth Serum. Why be a bald gnome when you can have a beautiful head of hair? You can find all of us at gnomestew.com, at gnomestew on Twitter, and Gnome Stew on Facebook. Matt, I know you don't exist anywhere else, but John, where else can we find you on the internet?
Well, you know, I mean, I have a pretty unique name. You can find me anywhere under John Arcadian, but, you know, recently I'm trying to increase my presence for my singing career because I've recently taken up singing.
Uh-huh.
Would you like to hear some?
Let's do it.
All right. What'd you think? I mean, it's pretty good considering I'm a metronome.
I think on that note, we're going to say goodbye.
Well, where can we find you on the internet, Angela?
You can find me at Orichez13 on the Twitters and anywhere else Gnome Stew is. I just can't top the metronome. I think we need to have a mutiny and put John in the stew this week.
Well, let me think on that.